Students had been studying the issue before they arrived. They watched and listened. And after the oral arguments were done and the Supreme Court justices had left the stage, they lined up to query the lawyers representing the State Division of Juvenile Justice and State Public Defender's Office. One of the first questions asked was why the two agencies involved in juvenile justice were in court resolving something they might have worked out between themselves.
Was there any possibility that they both split the cost?
Parties often do work things out, and certainly there are situations where state agencies can come up with interagency agreements to resolve issues. That's just not the posture of this case.
Assistant Attorney General David Wilkinson, representing the Division of Juvenile Justice, was defending the decision of the Bethel trial judge and later the Court of Appeals to require the state public defenders to foot the bill for flying the defendant and an adult from Marshall to Bethel for the delinquency hearing. Assistant Public Defender Kelly Taylor is fighting to reverse that decision, and she raised the idea that state lawmakers could play a role.
I guess that's something the legislature could also do. They could decide that they wanted it to be divided.
So what we really have here is a squabble between two different agencies of the state about who's going to pay.
That's Supreme Court Justice Craig Stowers.
If you've got two agencies that just want an answer, why don't the agencies go to the legislature and ask the legislature to clarify what it is that the legislature intends? Why is this a court case? Why don't you folks go and solve the problem if you can?
Judges had lots of questions for both attorneys. At the heart of it is the lack of clear legal language. Chief Justice Joel Bulger asked Taylor what would happen if the Supreme Court decides the law doesn't clearly require either agency to pay the bill.
What do we do then?
I think this court will have to decide which government entity is the appropriate entity to pay the costs.
Why is that our choice and not the legislature's choice? Don't we just wash our hands of it and say there's no statute that says?
Well, there's a constitutional right to appear at trial. So the most important thing is that those funds are available for that child who's exercising that right. And there will be policy ramifications of whatever decision that this court makes, but I think because of the importance of the right, this court will have to make a decision.
One of the students watching the oral arguments suggested another option, the internet.
Hello, my name is Caden. So especially in our world of technology and video communication, why can't we just FaceTime a court case?
Well, I think it feels different. Don't you think it would feel different to confront somebody in person versus over FaceTime?
Yeah, I guess it would feel a little different, yet if there's thousands of dollars to be dealt with. No,
the only thing I would add is that the Alaska Supreme Court, in writing the court rules, has actually talked about video conference participation by juveniles, and it doesn't allow it when we're at this trial, probably for the same reasons that Kelly was explaining. When you have a hearing where testimony is being taken that can be used, you know, against the juvenile, then that's where that right is really heightened to be there.
The Supreme Court justices will take a while to make the ruling, though Justice David Winfrey says that doesn't mean the court is divided on this or any other issue.
You might be surprised to know that almost all, probably 95% of our cases, 90 to 95% of our cases are unanimous. We are all in agreement most of the time.
I agree with that.
The program, bringing Supreme Court oral arguments in actual cases to students at Alaska high schools, began in 2010. It's designed to help students understand the court system. The judges also hope it'll encourage young people to become Alaska lawyers. I'm Johanna Urich.